could kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Always about health, healing, living a longer life, looking at the environment, and then looking at the issues that are generally not covered, certainly not objectively in the mainstream media. Today, a single compound, a natural nutrient, can kill 5 types of cancer, often in a single dose. There's an herb. It was clear back to the Neanderthal period. Heals wounds, speeds healing, stops pain. Easy to get. Also, there's a new study that takes a look at type 2 diabetes, that it's really just an inflammatory illness. What does that mean? And vitamin E, it can slow the Alzheimer's brain decline. We have so much, always some peer-reviewed literature. Then I'm going to share some thoughts from Dr. Sidney Wolf, who wrote an article for the British Medical Journal. I know Sidney Wolf. In fact, I met Sidney Wolf about 2 years ago at a fundraising party at Phil Donahue's apartment over on Fifth Avenue. And he's been doing a lot of work over the decades about pharmaceutical companies. This is his article title: Escalating Criminal and Civil Violations. Pharma Has Corporate Integrity. Not really. So, and he says, quote, escalating criminal behavior by pharmaceutical companies is due to insufficient penalties. It's short. I think it's very important. We'll talk about it. Because after all, think of it this way. The pharmaceutical companies have spent billions upon billions of dollars in settlements. They have killed millions of people. They have injured hundreds of millions of people through their different medications and doctors using them. And yet, no one is ever held personally accountable, and it doesn't stop them from doing what they do. They just keep doing more of the same. Even when they get hit with enormous penalty, it's just the cost of doing business. But the cost of doing business could be someone's life. They don't care. Ralph Nader has written President George Bush at the George Bush Presidential Center down in Dallas, Texas, a little letter. Quote, the country you deserved. The country you destroyed. A letter to George Bush. So we have a lot to talk about. And throughout the entire program, I'll be taking your calls. We call this program Talk Back because you have a chance to call in and share your points of view and questions and insights. That number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Also, I realize people cannot always be in front of a radio, or even for that matter over the internet. A lot of people drive, take trips. Well, the good news is anywhere in North America, including Canada, you can just call a number and hear this program. Put it on speaker. People do. I get emails all the time, cab drivers, truck drivers, people traveling, so they never miss anything. Here are the two numbers that you can call and listen to this program. 401-347-0456. 401-347-0456. And 712-432-7231. 712-432-7231. Why did we have two new numbers? That's because we have so many new people listening. And I think we're up to 8 million minutes. That the service they had, the broadband, wasn't enough, so they had to get some new numbers. That's why. Let's begin. It's called germanium. Germ, G-E-R-M, anium, A-N-I-U-M. A single compound, just this by itself, is able to kill 5 types of cancer, often in a single dose. This is from the Natural Society. Now, it's a very powerful antioxidant. It's an oxygen catalyst. It's an electrostimulant. Really helps your immune system. So it's a mineral. It's a trace mineral. It's found in the food that you eat, and especially in marine algae, and bracket fungus, garlic, shiitake mushrooms, ginseng, and aloe. It's been used for a long time to treat breast cancer, lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, lymphomas, to name just a few. G-132, otherwise known as germanium, has a tremendous benefit in helping to combat the development and growth of cancerous cells. It inhibits metastatic growth of cancer cells and is beneficial on all levels in a single dose. The mineral is also rapidly eliminated from the body after oral doses without any trace of toxicity. This means that, as opposed to many cancer drugs and treatments like radiation and chemotherapy, this substance can be assimilated by the body with ease and released from the body without disrupting the overall health of the good cells. So there are no side effects resulting from taking germanium. Here's one piece of research. Quote, "The literature demonstrating its anti-cancer effects is particularly strong. Germanium induces interferon gamma, enhances natural killer cell activity, and inhibits tumor and metastatic growth effects often detectable after a single oral dose. In addition, oral consumption of germanium is readily assimilated and readily cleared from the body without evidence toxicity. Given these findings, the absence of human clinical trials for germanium is unexpected. Possible explanations of why the convincing findings from animal studies have not been used to support clinical trials are discussed. They are recommended," end quote. So knowing that a lot of you are completely healthy, but you may know someone who is not, everything that we can do to enhance a person's wellness and let them know of all the options, we'll share it. Here's something that is known to help with heartburn, can stop a fever, will help a woman with irregular menstrual cycles, menstrual cramps and pain, muscle spasms, helps you turn off inflammation, fights infections, reduces bleeding, is a natural diuretic, and is good at wound healing. What is it? Yarrow. Y-A-R-R-O-W. In fact, it also speeds healing of wounds and stops pain. Yarrow is also known as Achillea millefolium or Knight's millefol, or carpenter's grass. What we know is it's very powerful as an antimicrobial, and it's good. It works to in the body by fighting infections. So, according to University of Maryland research, one study on this herb found that it to be very effective at lessening menstrual cramps. It's full of flavonoids, and those help to soothe out the lining of the intestines and the uterus. It's also a mild sedative, so it can be used to soothe anxiety. So, you can get yarrow. It's inexpensive. You can also grow yarrow. It has white flower heads, grows along roadways. So, that's why we should be looking at some of the herbs we have to help us. There's also new research that shows that sleep plays a very vital role in brain health. And when you're sleep deprived, that is conducive to brain tissue loss. This is important because think of how many people now, because of social media, are going on the internet constantly, have their cell phones with them, don't turn it off, and then sleep with the cell phone right by their pillow. Very bad because it's pulsing electromagnetic waves into the brain. Not good. Then think of the people who are up on a computer all night. Not good. And then they can't sleep. Or they eat late at night, blood sugar goes up, And it's like putting your foot on the accelerator. Even if you're tired and you want to go to sleep, the body now has a rush of sugar, so it's not going to. And what will give you that sugar? Pizzas will, bread of any form will, a soft drink certainly will, desserts will. We're eating too late at night. We should be eating earlier in the day. And if you are hungry at night, lemon with ice, water, or organic popcorn. That won't impact your blood sugar. Natural News is stating that the importance of sleep in relation to physical health, well, we all know. Too little sleep has been linked to diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and even an increased risk of motor vehicle accidents. So we know we should be getting more sleep, but about one-third of the entire U.S. population doesn't. And young people are having a really bad time because they're socializing till late at night. In children, sleep is very critical to brain maturation, with connective tissue strengthening between the left and right hemispheres of the brain during sleep. And according to the University of Colorado Boulder study, this study, which was conducted on children from 2, 3, and 5 years old, indicates that sleep is linked to brain development by strengthening the bonds between the two hemispheres. Likewise, in adults and even more in children, sleep has been linked to processing and storing what we have learned and encountered during the day by a university study. During sleep, materials that we have learned are stored as long-term memories, making future learning easier. And the study looked at the memorization capability of children between the ages of 8 and 11 and young adults by showing them a series of actions and then either having them sleep for a full night or stay awake for an entire day and then see what they could remember. The less sleep you have, the less you remember. So getting a good night's sleep helps improve your memory. And there was a good study on this in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. Illustrated that late afternoon caffeine, even 6 hours before bed, can disrupt your sleep. In fact, 2 to 3 cups of coffee 6 hours before bed are enough to significantly reduce sleep time by more than an hour. Not good. We have an epidemic of diabetes in the United States, in children, in adults, and then around the world. Is it because of the pancreas there's something wrong, or is there something else? According to a new study, it is very probably a inflammatory process, meaning that when you are consuming the amount of food that we do that is highly processed, that's high in animal proteins and high in caffeine and high in sugar, that all of these are pro-inflammatory. And that is what really precipitates the underlying diabetes. So go on an anti-inflammatory diet. I suggest you try one for a month. Lots of clean food, raw food, juices, salads, sprouts. And keep in lots of smoothies with your compounding formulas. And see how you feel when your body starts to rebalance itself at the biochemical level, where you turn off inflammation. Then watch your pancreas and other important glands and organs start to rebalance. And finally, we have new research that out of Minnesota VA Health Center that shows that vitamin E can help slow Alzheimer's brain decline. And that's very important. And I would suggest that a person takes about 800 units of the mixed tocopherols. Mixed meaning beta, gamma, delta, alpha. So this way you're getting a full spectrum. All right, and also up, want to talk about, share with you this letter that Ralph Nader wrote to President Bush. It's entitled, The Country You Destroyed, A Letter to George Bush. It's short, but I think it says a lot. Dear Mr. Bush, a few days ago, I received a personalized letter from your presidential center, which included a solicitation card for donations that actually provided words for my reply. They included, quote, "I'm honored to help tell the story of the President Bush's legacy, and I'm thrilled that the Bush Institute in advanced timeless principles and practical solutions to the challenges facing our world," end quote. Did you mean the timeless principles that drove you and Mr. Cheney to invade the country of Iraq, which, contrary to your fabrications, deceptions, and cover-ups, never threatened the United States, nor could Iraq, under its dictator and his dilapidated military, threaten its far more powerful neighbors, even if the Iraqi regime wanted to do so? Today, Iraq remains a country roughly the size and population of Texas. You destroyed a country where over a million Iraqis, including many children and infants, lost their lives. Millions more were sickened or injured, and millions more were forced to become refugees, including most of the Iraqi Christians. Iraq is a country rife with sectarian strife that your prolonged invasion provided and an opportunity for those to take advantage of. It provoked everything into an open warfare. Iraq is a country where Al-Qaeda is spreading with explosions, taking up to 60 lives per day. Just this week, it was reported that the U.S. had sent Hellfire air-to-ground missiles to Iraq's Air Force to be used against encampments of the country's branch of Al-Qaeda. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq before your invasion. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were mortal enemies. The Bush-Cheney group and perspective on Iraq, together with the loss of tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers' lives, countless injuries and illnesses and registers, with the passage of time, no recognition by you that you did anything wrong, nor have you accepted responsibility for the illegality of your military actions without a congressional declaration of war. You even turned your back on Iraqis who work with U.S. military occupation forces as drivers, translators, etc., at great risk to themselves and their families, and they were desperately requesting visas to the United States, often with the backing of U.S. military personnel. Your administration allowed fewer Iraqis into the United States than did Sweden in that same period of time, and far fewer than Vietnamese refugees coming to the United States during the 1970s. When you were a candidate, I called you a corporation running for the presidency, masquerading as a human being. In time, you turned a metaphor into a reality. As a corporation, you expressed no remorse, no shame, no compassion, and a resistance to admit anything other than that you have done nothing wrong. Day after day, Iraqis, children, and others continue to die and suffer terribly. When the paraplegic U.S. Army veteran Tom Young wrote you last year seeking some kind of recognition that many things went horribly wrong and to the soldiers and to Iraqis, you did not give him a reply. And as you did not give Cindy Sheehan a reply, who lost her son, Casey, in Iraq. As you said, quote, "The interesting thing about being the president is you don't feel like you owe anybody an explanation. As a former president, nothing has changed as you make your very lucrative speeches before business groups and remarkably ask Americans for money to support your continued work in public service. Pollsters have said that they believe a majority of Iraqis would say that life today is worse for them than under the brutal dictatorship of Saddam Hussein. They would also say George W. Bush left Iraq worse off than when he entered it, despite U.S.-led sanctions prior to 2003 that took so many lives of Iraqi children and damaged the health of so many civilian families. Your national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice, said publicly in 2012 that while, quote, the arc of history may well turn out better for post-invasion Iraq than the present-day violent chaos. She did, quote, take personal responsibility for the casualties and the wreckage. Do you? Can you, at the very least, publicly urge the federal government to admit more civilian Iraqis who served in U.S. military occupation to this country to escape the retaliation that has been visited on them, their lives? Isn't that the minimum you could do just to lessen somewhat the massive blowbacks that your reckless military policies have caused? It was your anti-terrorism White House advisor, Richard Clark, who wrote in his book Against All Enemies, Inside America's War on Terror, soon after leaving his post, that the U.S. played right into Osama bin Laden's hands by invading Iraq. Are you privately pondering what your invasion of Iraq did to the Iraqis and American military families, the economy, and to the spread of Al-Qaeda attacks in numerous countries? Sincerely yours, Ralph Nader. Well, okay. I'm Gary Knoll. People all over the country have a chance to call in now and share their points of view. Let's say hello to Roger in Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question is about smoking. How can a person stop smoking cigarettes?
Well, you have to break that into three parts. How long have you been smoking?
Very recently, about a year.
So you only were smoking a year?
I can barely hear you, Gary. We have a bad connection.
Okay. How old are you?
He's about 39.
Someone else then. All right. What is their overall state of health?
His state of health is fairly good.
What's his diet like?
A diet?
Yeah, what does he eat?
He seems to be eating correctly.
That doesn't tell me anything. I need specifics.
Excuse me?
I need... we're having a hearing problem here.
We have a bad connection, Gary. I can't make you out.
Okay, hang up and just listen over the internet, all right?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Okay. All of us have experienced someone who smokes. And it's always frustrating, especially if they're close to us, because we're generally not going to prevail in getting them to stop. They'll become annoyed and there'll be arguments, but we know the dangers of smoking and you're assuming that they don't. They do. Everyone who smokes, every adult who smokes, knows that it's harmful. We've had too much information getting out to the public in the last 30 years for people not to be fully aware. But we also have information getting out on the dangers of alcohol. We see it. And yet people drink more now than ever before. We know how bad being overweight is. You ask a person, do you think you're healthier being this weight, 40% over your body weight, or when you were less weight? They'll say, well, yeah, I felt better when I was less weight. Then why aren't you watching what you eat? I think we get confused by what we see as the end stage, a tipping point, where someone is manifesting some imbalance versus the motivation that got them into that problem and the recurring thoughts that keep them relocking and reloading their thoughts, and the behavior doesn't change. That's why you have to break this into some pieces. So the first piece is, does a person want to stop? If a person wants to stop, that's the most important thing that you can have going for you. Will there be a point in time where they'll go through withdrawals, physical withdrawals? Yes, there is. That's true of caffeine. It's true of, and they'll get headaches from, terrible headaches generally from getting off caffeine. Giving up sugar, they'll crave it because the candida that's in their body is craving it. And so that's one way to, you know, to feed these yeasts, and the yeast then grow, and then a person eats more, and the yeast grow more. Creates a cycle. So whether it's alcohol, smoking, caffeine, sugar, there's all this is coming from addiction. the easiest way to approach it is to begin a one-month cleansing program. And during that program, you want to put as much chlorophyll into the body as reasonable by starting with one glass of fresh-made vegetable juice. And then I use generally to help people, I'll use tomatoes, garlic, onions, there's some coconut oil, flaxseed oil. You can use some horseradish. And I cut that with aloe vera, about 4 ounces of aloe vera juice. And then you can use apple juice for the remainder of it. And so it's tolerable for most people's taste, but at least it's cleansing, it's detoxing. For other people, I would start with lemon, lots of lemon, like 2 or 3 lemons, whole lemons, with watermelon and some Manuka honey. That starts it all as well. For others, you could start with wheatgrass, 2 ounces, 3 times a day. That's more problematic because most people don't have an opportunity to be around where they can get the wheatgrass juice. If you can, if you're near a health food store and you can get it, fine. Otherwise, you can take one of the chlorophyll powders, the green powders, and have that 2 or 3 times a day in water, and that helps as well. You're flooding the body with the phytonutrients. There's natural chelation involved. Then there are nutrients that are known to help feverfew. That's important. You want to keep the brain from going into a withdrawal, which it frequently does. And so feverfew helps that. Also, cat's claw is important, and cayenne is important. Ginseng also will help, and non-flush niacin. And B-complex, generally B1, B6, and folic acid with B12. I would go around 1,000 micrograms or 1 milligram of the B12 and the folic acid in methylated form. If it's methylated B12 and methylated folic acid, it really helps a person give up smoking without going through withdrawal and having ravenous appetite and wanting to binge on sugar. And then always have throughout the day large salad. Make a huge salad, and you can put avocado in it, also pomegranates. A nice apple cider vinegar, which is very good for rebalancing your body's pH balance, and lemon juice, radishes, sweet onion. These are all good, but you could also put cashews, which are good, and almonds in there as well. And then a variety of different sprouts, sunflower sprouts, and a nice, very delicate lettuce, like a bib lettuce. And have that whenever you get hungry. Now, if you start to have unusual cravings, then have a can of sardines with mustard on it. That'll also help. So then you start to get to where you get through your first week. And during that first week, that's where the symptoms of withdrawal happen, and that's where you start to want to smoke or you want to eat something. And then you can always make yourself a bowl of popcorn, organic popcorn, put a little canola oil on it or coconut oil, a little bit of Himalayan sea salt, and it'll turn off the appetite, but it gives you some sense of satiety, and there's not going to be any calories there. So that's another way of helping yourself. So those are some of the things I would do to go through the withdrawal, and then get yourself into walking. Power walking is important because it creates endorphins, the feel-good hormones, and those endorphins can make a difference. And if you walk for 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes in the late afternoon, early evening, then for at least half the day, you're going to feel an awful lot better. And that makes a difference as well. Also, if you find yourself starting to get any headaches, take some magnesium and calcium, generally in the neighborhood of about 1,000 milligrams. And that will help you. Valerian root will help. And the omega-3 fatty acids, especially the DHA, will make a difference as well. So those are some things that can be done. Acupuncture is also good, and massage is good, especially reflexology. All the best to whoever it was, Roger, that you're helping. I'm Gary Knoll. If you'd like to call in and share a question, a comment, our number on TalkBack is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And while the next person is thinking about calling in, I want to share a very short piece from Dr. Sidney Wolfe, a public citizen, to the British Medical Journal. Now, why is this important? I filmed a gentleman, a medical doctor, who was forced to retire. And when I was filming him up in Illinois, and he was a teacher as well as a medical doctor, he said how embarrassed he was because he should have known better. He's the one who teaches other medical students what they should know. And he hadn't done his homework about the anti-pain medication he was taking, Vioxx. As a result, he ended up with a stroke, and it nearly killed him. He couldn't practice anymore and couldn't teach. And the day that we were filming him, he was putting a for sale sign in the front yard. It had turned his whole life upside down. And instead of apologizing, instead of coming forward and acknowledging they had brought out a bad drug, the company was never forced by the FDA to withdraw the drug from the market. They voluntarily withdrew it, but only after 4 years. And during that four-year period, a doctor working at the FDA, a Dr. Graham, had warned the FDA that this was a bad drug, that you're going to have a lot of heart attack and strokes. Now, I filmed Dr. Graham, David Graham, and I filmed him in front of Congress when he was giving a testimony under oath that he had been threatened and he had been intimidated. In effect, they did everything to try to bribe him at the FDA not to make any waves, not to tell what he knew. They relegated him to some insignificant department after he had been a whistleblower, but he was a whistleblower. At the end of all this, there were two lawsuits that were settled. One was for about $700 million. The other was for about $5 billion. Immediately upon announcement of this lawsuit, the stock went up. Wall Street was happy. You put it behind you. This company had put a lot of lawsuits behind them, but unfortunately, they also had done a lot of damage to a lot of people, caused a lot of people to die. We now guesstimate that the number is between 60,000 and 500,000 dead. To put it in perspective, this company, with one drug, Vioxx, killed more Americans than the 10 years. Actually, it was 12 years, but because they always seemed to exclude the 2 years that President Kennedy had the so-called advisors, which really weren't advisors in Vietnam. But let's just say 10 years, where 58,000 died. So how is it that no one is held accountable, and they go right back to doing more? And this is true throughout all of pharmaceutical industries. So this is why I'm interested in what Dr. Wolf had to say. Quote, excerpts, are criminal and civil penalties of hundreds of millions of dollars an important deterrent to lawbreaking by international drug companies? Further, would external monitoring in the form of U.S. government-mandated corporate integrity agreements to prevent reoccurrences of such illegal activities lasting 5 years after being signed be an additional deterrent? Yes, in both cases, but only if the size of the penalties outweighed the company's gains while violating the laws, and only if enforcement of the corporate integrity agreements were effective. Unfortunately, neither is the case. This evaluation is based upon recent sharp escalation in the frequency with which many giant multinational drug companies repeatedly engage in illegal, criminal, and civil activity after previously paying enormous fines and despite monitoring under the corporate integrity agreements. It seems that for some companies, commission of such criminal and civil violations has become part of their business models. In the past 3.5 years, criminal and civil penalties have totaled $18 billion, well over half the total for the past 21 years. GlaxoSmithKline topped the list of repeat offenders with total criminal and civil penalties of $7.5 billion since 1991. And there were also 6 different federal settlements and an additional number with states. Pfizer was the second highest with $2.9 billion overall since 1991. 11 other companies also had criminal or civil settlements of both exceeding $50 million on at least 2 occasions. An analysis of several of the repeat civil payments and criminal penalties by GlaxoSmithKline and Pfizer based on publicly available government documents illustrates the failure of such large penalties and the parallel failure of the accompanying oversight to curb such behavior. These escalating patterns of repeated criminal violations and civil settlements to resolve serious allegations of civil lawlessness hardly bespeak corporate integrity for GlaxoSmithKline, Pfizer, or many other companies who are also repeat offenders. We are forced to conclude that neither the current level of penalties nor corporate integrity agreements are effective, and that there is a pathological lack of corporate integrity in many drug companies. End quote. Well, I would agree with that, but I think it is, you have to understand how it works. And here's how it works. The pharmaceutical companies have one motive: increase value of the share of their stock to their stockholders. It is through that increased value with some so-called miracle drug that they're able to get the revenue stream in the billions of dollars per drug per year, and then be able to get the bonuses to the heads of these companies, and their board of directors get nice stipends and everybody's happy. But if they were doing it honestly, ethically, first they would ask, do we really need this pharmaceutical approach to treat a given condition? Are there other ways of helping prevent a condition or treat a condition? And they would have to say, yes, there are, because there is about 88,000 clinicians in the United States, chiropractors, medical doctors, holistic nurses, nurse practitioners, registered dietitians, nutritionists, all of whom help people using non-medical approaches. So you can't say that there's no other way of helping a person except with this drug. Then the idea is that the drug itself is under their full control. Now we're seeing more and more, and mainly because they're finally looking, and they're asking, all these different drugs for depression, or for AIDS, or for pain, do they actually work? Are they safe? And they're finding out that, no, they don't work. And that's because the pharmaceutical company selected people who designed the protocols, and they designed them so that they could make some claim, but then they get to keep everything secret. How did they get away with this? Well, it's simple. They put billions of dollars into lobbying. So they have lobbyists in Washington. Then they have money that goes to foundations that then fund departments in universities, medical schools, and curriculum. And then they have enormous amounts of money that they give to medical doctors, generally ones with high profiles or a good reputation, to come to their conferences and do lectures on their drugs. They have ghostwriters, people that had nothing in the world to do with the study but will put their name on it because they'll get thousands of dollars to put their name on a study. They have enormous control over the FDA, the USDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and the National Cancer Institute, because they hire people, former commissioners of the FDA, former top people at the CDC, now work for them. So they have a constant revolving door, and they pay big bucks. They get legislators and pay big bucks. And then they advertise everywhere. Just watch today how many ads on television are for pharmaceutical drugs. So no matter where you go, if you go to the media, they're covered. Congress, covered. Medicaid, Medicare, VA, covered. They wrote the law, the Medicare law, that makes it so they can only sell expensive drugs, not inexpensive. Make them indemnified so that nobody can sue them for bad vaccines. They did it. And under the first Bush and Quayle. Get famous people in academia on their side. They've got think tanks and front groups all over the place. So when you spread around hundreds of billions of dollars, you're going to end up influencing almost everything in the game. Hence, they can kill any amount of people. No one will go to jail. They'll pay a fine, and they'll keep doing it because they're not very bright. These are technocrats. Technocrats then employ bureaucrats, the dumbest people, and then the technocrats are under the guidance of plutocrats, who are under the absolute control of oligarchs. That's the system that we have. It's a top-down system where everyone's greedy and everyone has something in the game, so everyone's willing to compromise, lie, look the other way, and not be honest. It's only when they finally come to that moment where they realize they can no longer be a part of it and they tell us the truth, then we find out, gee whiz, you mean we've all been taking this drug and we didn't have to? Yeah, that's right. You mean all this chemotherapy, this hundreds of billions of dollars have been spent in research and use, it's not really proven to cure cancers? No. 88% of all cancers are organic cancers, and there's no proof that chemotherapy is going to really cure you or improve the quality of your life. And they give no credit ever to anyone who survives cancer as if it had anything to do with the person's own immune system. It's all, they take 100% of the credit, even though they cannot prove that it was the drug that did it. But they take no credit for the 500,000 people every year plus that die using their chemotherapy and radiation. So let's just go back. Let's make it simple. Let's go back 20 years. All right? 20 years, you're dealing with 10 million people who died using their therapy. By any measure, 10 million dead people using traditional therapy means that therapy should be considered medical genocide. You won't have a single person out of that whole movement at any level, not for the foundations, not the front groups, not the media, not the lobbyists, not the the ghostwriters, not the special speakers, not the so-called experts testified before Congress, not members of Congress that went to work for these companies or lobbied on their behalf. No one will say we have a bad paradigm. And as a result, in the next 20 years, you'll have even more people dying of cancer using only their therapies. So that's how much power that they have. And that's why when Sidney Wolfe wrote this in the British Medical Journal, quote, escalating criminal behavior by pharmaceutical companies, these are the very pharmaceutical companies who wrote the Medicare law. These are the same pharmaceutical companies working hand in hand with the insurance industry that wrote Obamacare. These are the criminals. And they break the law all the time. They've settled hundreds of thousands of lawsuits. We have the lawsuits. I hired two lawyers who spent a year doing nothing but collecting every lawsuit that was settled by the pharmaceutical industries and Wall Street. Both are complete sociopathic groups. The entire culture of Wall Street is sociopathic. The entire pharmaceutical culture is sociopathic. They do not give a damn if you die. They just care that they're paid for the treatment you get. They're not bright. These are some of the dumbest people on earth. Well, except for the people they marry and who are surgically enhanced. You know, they all look like Bruce Jenner sooner or later. I mean, and we give these people credit for what? Cure permanently. Yeah, then we'll give you credit. Instead, you're killing and you're not taking credit. And we don't have the brains to say, hold on a second. 10 million people died using your therapy, and you determined that anyone else suggesting any other therapy is a quack? Well, then, how is it that you're not accusing yourself of malfeasance, incompetence, and you've got the blood of 10 million people on your hand? Only in America could you kill 10 million people and be everyone's hero in the business media, on Wall Street, to those blithering idiots on MSNBC. Only that. It's just amazing what we allow. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. Give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And let's say hello to David from Portland, Oregon. Hi, David.
And you? Hello.
Hi, David. Hello. Speak up. Yes.
Hi, yeah. I have two quick questions. One is your thoughts on wild Alaskan salmon at this point. The second is I use a chlorella from it's grown in Taiwan, but is processed and shipped about 300 miles away from Fukushima.
I wouldn't use it, and I wouldn't. If we were to believe the authorities, both the Japanese authorities that we shouldn't believe because they're a bunch of racist, misogynist individuals running their government, and they lie to their own people without any thought of the what it means to the people becoming radioactive, including the children. And now they pass a secrecy law. So if you tell the truth about how bad it is, you could go to prison. That's one way of dealing with the problem, right? Just put everyone in prison that's willing to tell the truth. Separately, we have known for some time that the fish actually swim. Now, this may be, I'm sure, up in Portland, you're aware of this, right? That
sure.
Fish actually swim. That means they can swim thousands of miles, and do. In fact, 100% of all the bluefin tuna recently tested out of California were contaminated with radiation. Well, there are very few fish in the ocean that swim as far as salmon. So therefore, I would not take any chances with any fish coming out of the Pacific Ocean. Any. All right?
So anything from Alaska at this point you would more or less steer away from?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All the best to you. And for the final part of our program today, I want to share some issues on the environment. As many of you are experiencing now, depending upon where you live, it's cold. Why? Well, for one side of the argument, they'll say, see, there can't be global warming. Look how cold it is, record cold. You'll hear that from the Rush Limbaugh crowd. Indeed, they are correct. It is record cold, but it's because of global warming that you're having record cold. In fact, from Common Dreams, there is now a polar vortex threatening the U.S. with bone-chilling temperatures. In fact, all the ingredients are there for a near-record or historic cold outbreak. Residents across a wide stretch of the United States are bracing for dangerously cold and potentially record-breaking temperatures as another wave of Arctic air brings frigid conditions and polar vortexes. In fact, tomorrow it's supposed to be in the low 30s in Fort Myers, Florida. That is cold. And if you're under 40 years of age, you've never seen this before, according to a meteorologist, Ryan Moe. The National Weather Service warned that it's going to hit 60 below zero with wind chills in the northern plains and the upper Midwest. Quote, the upper pattern across the nation will continue to be dominated by Arctic intrusions, bringing reinforcing shots of cold air to the country. Forecast models remain consistent in carrying the polar vortex into the northern tier of the United States while carrying it eastward in time. Many locations may see their temperature drops. Okay, what does this mean in lay language? What this means is this. Across Europe, Asia, North America, what you're seeing is you're seeing the coldest temperatures that anyone has ever seen. These are all historic. In fact, in Minnesota, the temperatures are 35 below zero today. Now, that is the new norm. In fact, in some places, thousands of animals have died in a single day because they went from a high temperature to a sub-zero temperature in a matter of 8 hours. Their bodies could not acclimate, even those that normally would be outside and could withstand that kind of cold if it was gradual. We're also seeing this happen to the forest. We're seeing large die-offs of forest. Now, recently I was in the upper mountains of Arizona. I went there to do my yearly spiritual quiet alone meditation retreat. And everywhere you looked, you saw forest fires. Everywhere. Why? Because it was bone dry, and also because there now is the infestation of beetles. Beetles that they normally would not have seen. Now they're common. On the other end of it, today they announced the hottest year in history in Australia. Major drought and major forest fires, the worst forest fires in Australian history. But the other side of that is that Australia will also have the coldest winter in its history. So you end up with the hottest summer, the coldest winter, the most rain, all at the same time. And it confuses people. All of this is due to climate change. And all this is due to global warming. So where to be? Well, be aware that how are you going to grow crops when you are at higher altitudes or in the northern hemisphere and support life if a substantial part of the year you're going to be frozen or sub-zero? At the other end, you don't want to be in a place where there's going to be tropical storms that could wash away your farm or ranch. And that's why take your time and read the article that it took me a year to research that's free as a public service up on ProgressiveRadarNetwork.com on the best places in the world to live, because I took this into consideration. So get ready for the new norm. The new norm is radical fluctuations. The most rain, the most heat, the worst fires, the worst drought, the worst snowstorms, the worst frigid cold. This is all going to be happening. And this year, we can expect the most tornadoes and the most hurricanes and the most earthquakes at any time in our history. And finally, when we look at the radiation impacting the ecosystem, there's always a lag. First, there'll be complete denial by the United States, by the U.S. fisheries, by the EPA, by the White House. Nothing from Fukushima is impacting our life here or our waters or our fish. Not true. But first you have to go through the official denial, then to see the ultimate reality. The ultimate reality is that every single one of the bluefin tuna caught recently off California had radiation at unacceptable levels. You've seen the complete disintegration of almost the entire starfish population off the west coast of the United States. You see massive sores, the type that come from immune dysfunction, from walruses and sea lions and whales and killer whales and dolphins. Here's the latest. This is from the LATimes.com. West Coast sardine crash could radiate throughout ecosystem. The sardine fishing boat Eileen motored slowly through moonlight waters from San Pedro to Santa Catalina Island and returned without a single fish. Tonight's pretty reflective of how things have been going. Not very well, said Hansen. To blame is the biggest sardine crash in generations, which has made schools the small silvery fish a rarity on the West Coast. The decline has prompted steep cuts in the amount of fishermen are allowed to catch, and scientists say the effects are probably radiating through the ecosystem, starving brown pelicans, sea lions, and other predators that rely upon the oily, energy-rich fish for food. If sardines don't recover soon, experts warn the West Coast's marine mammals, seabirds, and fishermen could suffer for years. Yeah, well, expect it to happen. This is just the beginning of what we're going to see with the inability to be honest about the impact of Fukushima and radiation. We'll see the total decimation of aquatic life in the Pacific Ocean and then its impact upon us. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program.